Bhagavatam ki all glorious to the assembly of devotees. All glorious to the assembly of devotees. All glorious to the assembly of devotees. All glorious to Sri Sri Guru and Govinda. All glorious to Sri Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Nashta Praeshva Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Yuktama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Nashtaki. Good morning, everyone. All the folks at home, good morning. Today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 8, Text Number 4. Srinvata Shraya Nityam. Srinvata Shraya Nityam. Srinvata Shraya Nityam. Grinatas cha svachestitam. Kalena nati dirgena.
Kalena nati dirgena.
Kalena nati dirgena. Bhagavan Vishate Hidi.
Bhagavan Vishate Hidi.
Srinvata Shraya Nityam. Grinatas cha svachestitam. Kalena nati dirgena. Bhagavan Vishate Hidi. Srinvata Shraya Nityam. Hinatascha svachestitam. Kalena natidirdena. Bhagavan vishate hridi.
Shinvata
shradaya nityam.
Grinatascha
svachestitam.
Kalena
natidirgena.
Bhagavan
vishate hridi.
Shinvata
shradaya nityam.
Grinatascha
svachestitam.
Kalena
natidirgena.
Bhagavan
vishate hridi.
Shrinvata,
of those who hear,
Shradaya,
in earnestness,
Nityam,
regularly,
always,
Grinata,
taking the matter,
Cha,
also,
Svachestitam,
seriously by one's own endeavor.
Kalena.
Duration.
Not.
Atidirgena.
Very prolonged time.
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna.
Vishate.
Becomes manifest.
Hridi,
within one's heart. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada.
Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifested in their hearts within a short time.
Any questions?
That is a very good question. Purport. Cheap devotees or materialistic devotees of the Lord are very much desirous to see the Lord personally without meeting the requisite qualifications. Such third-grade devotees should know well that material attachment and seeing the Lord face to face cannot go together. It is not such a mechanical process that the professional Bhagavatam reciters can do the job on behalf of the third grade materialistic pseudo-devotee. The professional men are useless in this connection because they are neither self-realized nor interested in the liberation of the audience. They are simply interested in maintaining the material establishment of family attachment and earning some material benefits out of the profession. Excuse me. Maharaj Parikshit had no more than 7 days to live, but for others, Maharaj Parikshit personally recommends that one hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, nityam, always, by one's own effort and with serious devotion also. That will help one to see the Lord Sri Krishna manifested in one's heart within no time. Within no time now, he's saying. The pseudo-devotee, however, is very anxious to see the Lord according to his whims, not making any serious effort to hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and without detachment from material benefit. That is not the way recommended by an authority like Maharaj Parikshit, who heard and benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Om Anjana Timiranda Shalakananjana Shalakaya Chakshwara Unmilitamina Tasmai Srimi Guruve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Vedati Sva Padante Kam Vancha Kalpatu Vyascha Kripa Sintubhya Ebaja Titanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So thank you all for coming this morning or tuning in at home. You've already apparently achieved the purport of this verse. I know most of you here, I see you here regularly, so congratulations. I find there's an interesting juxtaposition between the mood of this verse and the mood of the purport of this verse. The verse itself is rather celebratory, victorious, one could say, in that if one desires to have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifested in their hearts within a short time, and that is something I know we all want to do on some level or another, all we have to do is regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam and take the matter very seriously by our own endeavor and very seriously. So that seems pretty simple. But then the purport is a bit of a, almost a rebuke, I would say, or a very serious guideline about the manner and from whom we should hear. And quite also some critical comments about people who are hearing from the wrong people. So to a certain extent, Prabhupada is condemning in the purport both the false reciters of the Bhagavatam as well as the people who are hearing from the false reciters of the Bhagavatam, calling them cheap or materialistic devotees or third grade materialistic pseudo devotees. So, you know, there are many grades, and sometimes we count up the grades, and other times we count down the grades. So if you're in a public school, you know, we're counting up the grades. You start at first grade, third grade is a little higher, and then you go up the grades until, you know, the 12th grade, presumably, is when people graduate from high school. We try to put our kids on a little bit of an accelerated pathway because, you know, who needs to be wasting their valuable human life in high school? But also you can go down the grade. So third grade, second grade, first grade. We want to be first grade devotees. A first grade devotee, you know, many, so many definitions, but the definition that's commonly given of a first class devotee is a first class devotee knows what needs to be done without being told and will do it enthusiastically in a mood of devotional service to God and the community of the Vaishnavas. Here Prabhupada is calling a third grade materialistic pseudo devotee. He's referring to third grade materialistic pseudo devotees. And along that same scale, such a devotee would be one who needs to be told what to do and will do it begrudgingly and only if they can see some benefit for themselves. And this is the sort of the standard situation of most religious people in the world. And that's already a step above. Most of the people in the world are rapidly becoming not religious. So even the low standard of being a third-grade materialistic pseudo-devotee is already better than the overwhelming masses of humanity, I would say. If they can even be called humans according to the definition of the Vedic version. And here, of course, we're hearing that we should hear regularly from the Vedic version, the Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra, Vidivina, Ahaikantiki, Harer Bhakter, Upatyayaiva Kalpate, that we should hear the versions of the Shruti, the Smriti, the Puranas, the Pancharatras, and to engage in a process of devotion or to engage in a process of yoga that is detached or divorced from these authorized scriptures is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. This is the conclusion of Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So I feel we can repeat his words with some authority in this August assembly, let's say. So Shruti Smirti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidinvina Ahaikantiki Harer Bhakter Upatyaya Vikalpate. Devotional service needs to be performed in accordance with the rules and regulations laid out in the scriptures. And all world religions, all scriptures have some kinds of rules and regulations. And all of the great world's religions require some obedience to those rules. I was visiting my karate teacher north of Atlanta. He lives in the rural area north of Atlanta, in the foothills of the Southern Appalachians. And he's a very devout Southern Baptist Christian. And so when I visit him, I like to go to his church. A lot of times it's just so he doesn't think I'm going to burn in hell. If I didn't go to the church with him, he might be concerned about my well-being. And I like going to the church also. To me, it's an interesting pseudo-anthropological study, just to see how the masses of America gather together to worship God on a Sunday. And it's actually quite nice. The masses of Americans in this part of the world actually do get together Sundays to worship God. And that is definitely a step in the right direction for humanity. But we can see, and I'm not meaning to pick on any one particular religion, we see this throughout Christianity, we also see this throughout every other religion I've ever exposed myself to, including the one I'm sitting in right now, which is that people come to God because they want something, and they need something. And because they're a little bit intelligent, or because they've gotten received a little bit of mercy, a little bit of eyes to see from the association of the devotee, they realize that Krishna has everything that we need. You know, if there is a supreme, all-powerful, all-knowing, all-present, loving divinity, well, that's the guy, you know, we need to get in touch with. But why do we want to get in touch with this person? And we see that a lot of it is really for materialistic reasons, starting with the desire to mitigate our own suffering, right? This is an experience that pretty much everybody shares wherever they go in the world. We are suffering. And that suffering manifests in so many different ways. On a very gross level, some people just can't get enough food, right? Some people don't have shelter over their head, or they don't have access to clean drinking water. And churches, places, when I say churches, I mean places of worship, provide these things to people. I mean, we distribute so much free food all over the world, and we're not alone in that. Shelter as well. We see that many people who make a decision to move into an ISKCON, brahmacharya ashram type setting, are coming from unhoused situations in various sorts. And I think many of us going back in the day can relate to that situation all well. We were vagabonds of one sort or another before we found this house that Srila Prabhupada built in which the whole world can live. But people come to this house looking for shelter, but oftentimes it's not the spiritual shelter that it was built for, it's some kind of material shelter. And we can somehow manage to get these people to wash a few pots or, you know, vacuum the floor or maybe run a few errands, but is it done blissfully with a happy heart and a mood of service? Well, only time will tell. If it is, such people typically stick around. If it isn't, such people typically go search for a less austere environment to try to satisfy their senses. But the qualification for seeing Krishna in fact and not as a product of our own mental speculation or sentimental emotional life is laid out quite clearly here, which is that we need to hear from the Bhagavat on a regular basis. And the phrase here that's used is, hold on, I'm coming with this. Oh, he says it in the purport. By our own effort, nityam, always by one's own effort and with serious devotion also. So the term here is shraddaya, by one's svadaya and svachestitam. Shraddaya refers to some rudimentary faith, right? We're teaching in the context of our physical and health education class, we're teaching kids some negotiation skills. Which is not my own mental speculation, that's straight out of the International Baccalaureate Program, whose curriculum that we follow, to negotiate outcomes with peers and authorities. And so we had them negotiate their physical and health education workout contracts for a quarter, and see if they could negotiate, and the point here is to negotiate in good faith. Which means I'm negotiating with someone, understanding that I might have to give something up, they're going to have to give something up, but together we are going to work to a solution that everybody can be happy with, negotiating in good faith. And so we have to read the Bhagavatam in good faith, meaning that we have to believe on some level that this is helpful, that this is useful, and not with a fault-finding mentality. Right? We can find so many faults in anything in the material world. I've recently found faults in the new versions of the Bhagavatam because I prefer the typeset with the serif fonts more than the typeset with the sans serif fonts, which is all the modern rage amongst the kids, is the sans serif. So we can always find some fault, but if I approach my Bhagavatams at home with this mentality, I'm not going to get anything out of it. So I happily set my fault-finding mentality aside, and the meaning is in the words and not the typeset that the words are written. This is a pretty dumb example, I know, but it's an example nonetheless. People find so many other faults with the Bhagavatam, completely overlooking the fact that the Bhagavatam itself says that even if these words are imperfectly composed, they are like a place of pilgrimage for us. And that's why we've all gathered here today. We've all come to this place of pilgrimage. I know that when I was working for the university and I used to travel a lot in the summers, many of the places I would travel to were places that I would consider, and the indigenous people of this land of America that we live in definitely considered to be holy places of pilgrimage. And so I would go to these places, you know, the headwaters of the Colorado River and the Grand Tetons and Yellowstone and all these beautiful places of really, what can I say, astounding beauty, and understanding that these are holy places of pilgrimage, but also understanding that if someone goes to the holy places of pilgrimage only to bathe in the waters there, which certainly I was doing, but not to hear from the great sages who occupy these places is really like on a crow's pilgrimage. It's not really getting the nectar. And we live in such a fortunate society, actually, because of the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, that we don't have to go anywhere to hear from the sages. As we heard this story this morning from Mother Mukhi and Bhakti Charuswami, that, you know, Prabhupada, when, you know, pushing back against the claim that he was ignoring his spiritual master, acknowledged that he is never separated from his spiritual master. And so in the same way, we are never separated from Srila Prabhupada as long as we are able to carry Srila Prabhupada's words in our hearts and in our minds and our consciousness. And that's why it's so essential to hear from the Bhagavatam on a regular basis. These words just become stuck to us. They become what predominates in our consciousness, as opposed to, you know, some talking head on the news media or all of the karma music that floods my mind on a daily basis, and so on and so forth. But anyway, back to the point. The qualification of imbibing the Bhagavatam and therefore having Krishna revealed to us, in fact, is simple but not easy, and it requires detaching ourselves from the desire for material sense gratification. And I know that even in the Hare Krishna movement these days, this is a slightly volatile topic, I would say. You know, we've all lived our lives, and the material world is entangling. And the things that we need to do to just keep ourselves alive in this world create entanglements. You know, any responsible person is going to try to earn an honest living for themselves. And any, you know, responsible parent is going to do what they can to provide a good life, a healthy life, a wholesome life for their children. And this requires getting our hands dirty, you know, in one way or another. And we become entangled. We become entangled with bills, with contracts, with emotional relationships, responsibilities, to no end, it seems. There's never enough time in the day to fill all of our responsibilities. But we need to make time to set all of that aside every day and hear the words of the Bhagavatam from an authorized reciter of the Bhagavatam. And the authorized reciter of the Bhagavatam is one who has, in fact, detached themselves from these things, not because they managed to set an hour out of their day to still the madness and absorb some nectar, but because they have become liberated while living in their own bodies, while living in the material world. They've become liberated from this. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, is the first and foremost of these devotees in the modern era, and remains as such, even, you know, as the years separate us from Srila Prabhupada's physical presence. These books live on in eternity. And that's why it's so important to have hard copies of Srila Prabhupada's books distributed in every town and village. You know, because the internet will die one day, for sure. Hopefully not. Well, who knows? I mean, it could really die at any moment, just like the rest of us. And Srila Prabhupada's commenting here in the purport that Maharaj Parikshit knew that he only had 7 days to live, but he was personally recommending that one hears Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, always, nityam. Because we are, in fact, all about to die. We don't know when, but in the grand scale of time, we are going to die in a short period of time. It could be today, it could be tomorrow. But it's coming, and this is such a situation of suffering. We see even in our community, young people leaving their bodies, you know, way too young in some cases. Other people, you know, as the age advances and the body starts to become infirmed, breaking down, and, you know, and I experienced this in my own life, and I'm by no stretch of the imagination old, right? the body just starts to fall apart, and it becomes not a matter of sudden trauma or tragedy, but a matter of slow decay and infirmity. And both of these situations are just suffering. And so we want to get out of this situation, right? And that's the purpose of the Bhagavatam. By hearing the Bhagavatam, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna becomes manifested in our hearts within a short period of time. So the endeavor is to hear. That is the yogic practice. I know when I cook for the deities here on Thursday, I like to play Prabhupada's chanting of the Brahma Samhita and the purport that he basically he spoke Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's purport to the book, the Brahma Samhita, that he translated with a few added flourishes of his own. And we were just studying this also in our science classes at Vanna, the part of the Bhagavatam, which is the part we actually just concluded. Now I'm coming to the point that I wanted to talk about the Bhagavatam. Ha, sorry. So in this part of the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami just finished the narration to King Parikshit about how Narada questioned Brahma about the creation of the universe. And so in this part of the Bhagavatam, we see the first two of the 10 main features of the Bhagavatam, Sarga and Visarga, which are the creation of the material universe and the secondary creation within the material universe. And so we just read this in the context of our science class, in the mood of comparing it to, you know, what does the so-called modern science teach us? And Brahma basically explained how the universe is created, and then in the next chapter, he will start to explain how he knows this. And in between, we see Maharaj Parikshit here beginning to question Sukadeva Goswami as to how did Lord Brahma know that. Lord Brahma just painted this picture that surely none of us can see. You know, nobody with a telescope looks in any direction in space, whether you're in the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere, looking up in space, down in space. Fun fact, it doesn't matter which direction you look in space, it all looks the same at a certain scale. We don't see Lord Brahma, you know, sitting on top of a gigantic lotus flower with a stem that incorporates all of 14 planetary systems, and so on and so forth. Nobody that I know or has ever reported in the, you know, the annals of human history has reported that, really, except for Lord Brahma, right? And we all take it on faith, of course, but I think it's fairly safe to say that we don't know a lot of people who've seen this version. And so King Parikshit starts kind of questioning Sukadeva Goswami. We're at the very beginning of this questioning, where true to a spiritual culture, before placing his questions before Sukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Parikshit is glorifying the Bhagavatam, glorifying the speaker of the Bhagavatam, and glorifying the hearers of the Bhagavatam, specifically here. But he's about to get into some pretty serious questions for Sukadeva Goswami. The first one being, if this entire universe is manifested out of the navel of the Mahavishnu, and then Lord Brahma is engineering everything subsequent to that, how is it that this creation is different from the Lord's original energy? That is an extremely intelligent question, and also a rather challenging question. You know, Maharaj Parikshit is basically asking Sukadeva Goswami, how is this possible? You've said something, but what you've said doesn't make sense to me. And so this is also the mood in which we should approach our own understanding of the Bhagavatam. It is, we should be able to question what we read in the Bhagavatam. A religious faith that cannot be challenged by doubts arising from the intelligence is not very valuable. You know, religious faith that stands up to doubts or can be reconciled with doubts is religious faith that can propel people into a lifelong practice of devotion. And we see this example from Maharaj Parikshit here. And we know that Srila Prabhupada also asked us to discuss our scriptures from all angles of vision, right? And if we discuss anything from all angles of vision, there will be differences of opinions. You know, one of the things that this Baptist preacher talked about, he was speaking from the book of Acts, which is starting to talk about how there was strife among different populations of Hebrews that were living in Judea just after the time of Jesus. And that there were the Hebrews that had stayed there, and then the Hebrews that had wandered into what is now Southeast Europe. and then even as far over into Italy, and then had come back, the so-called Hellenistic Jews, and they were at cultural odds with one another, and the people who had migrated back felt like the people who had stayed there were not doing enough social security and entitlements programs for their widows and the children and whatnot. So very much like the situation we see today in the Middle East. It was interesting that the pastor was talking about being able to tolerate and embrace differences even when it's culturally difficult for us. You know, that there is no cultural absolutes, you know, and people may have migrated here from somewhere and we may feel like you know, they're intruding on our territory, but we also migrated here from somewhere. Every single one of us, families, migrated here from somewhere. You know, and the people who were there then felt the same way about us moving in. So this is just the normal ebb and flow of humanity. And this is part of the varieties that makes us individuals. We all have an individual perspective on Krishna. Nobody is seeing Krishna in the same way as the person sitting right next to them during the darshan, and none of us are relating to Krishna in exactly the same way. And we should be free to express these things. You know, in the Bhaktivedanta Institute, we often talk about a plurality of vision. You know, for example, and without trying to get too political here, or too controversial, I should say, you know, the final structure of what will appear in the temple of the Vedic planetarium is something that is still, I would say, contested. And there are various camps. You know, there are people who want to try to build a model of what the Bhagavatam describes as the universe in a very literal way, in the most literal way as possible. There are people at the other extreme who might say that, you know, what is in the Bhagavatam is, you know, I say this as not to be offensive to the Bhagavatam, of course, but just as a perspective. Which is that these parts of the Bhagavatam are not Vaishnava Siddhanta, and when they conflict with what modern science says, we should go along with modern science because of, you know, telescopes and whatnot. And then there's a whole range of people in the middle who try to see some sort of nuance or some sort of synergy between pratyaksha, what we can observe directly, and shraddha, what we've heard and what we take on faith. The position that I advocate in this discussion is, why can't we present all of these viewpoints, you know, and let people make up their own minds based on their own qualifications? You know, how many people are, like, super detailed interested in this theme to begin with? It's like, this is not a central feature of our preaching, but it is an example of how the words in the Bhagavatam can be seen at all different angles of vision, and it's not who's right and who's wrong in that discussion necessarily, but the act of discussing it with devotion in a mood of personal reflection and seriousness. And so this is what Brahma's quality